walks like an animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animals, talking animal, talking animal. Must be an animal. Come hear the animals. Talking animals. Talking animals. Good morning. This is Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. And before we go any further, I want to wish Miss Julia a happy birthday. She's still answering the tons and tons of greetings and birthday wishes and congratulations on the amazing hour that she programmed at the end of Randy's show. So happy birthday. Congrats, Miss Julie. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Leo Grillo, the founder of Delta Rescue, which in this case refers not to the airline, but is an acronym standing for Dedication and Everlasting Love to Animals, located in Acton, California. Delta is a distinctive rescue operation in any number of ways, not least that it houses more than 1,500 dogs and cats, and that it's become a care-for-life sanctuary, meaning the animals become permanent residents versus being adopted out. 115 acre facility features two veterinary hospitals and a full-time veterinary staff to attend to all the animals' medical needs right there on site. We'll find out more about Delta, which this year marks its 35th anniversary, as does WMNF, by the way. When we speak of Leo Grillo in a few moments here on Talking Animals. Later in the show, we'll hear an extended piece of animal comedy from Kevin Nealon, a longtime fave and occasional guest on Talking Animals. Right now, I want to take a moment to let you know that WNF's fall membership drive begins in less than a month, on October 1st. I know, it seems like it wasn't all that long ago that we were holding our summer fun drive, but you won't hear this sort of fun drive talk again until 2015, February, I'm guessing. So, meanwhile, if you listen to Talking Animals for any length of time, you recall that we typically have a very high fundraising goal and only an hour on air to meet that goal. So it's always crucial to receive pledges well ahead of time. And with that in mind, I hope you'll consider supporting Talking Animals and me with an early pledge, $35, $50, whatever you can swing. Email me during the show today at dj@wmnf.org. You can donate directly to the Talking Animals tip jar. The link for that is on the show Facebook page and my personal Facebook page. So any help would be appreciated just to give us a running head start here for the membership drive starting October 1st. Right now, let's jump into an animal song of sorts. Over the weekend, I saw the Replacements, who were as sloppy and exhilarating as ever. Made me think of their version of Cruella de Vil. It's the Replacements now on Talking Animals.
Take a sudden chill, Cruella, Cruella de Vil. Glare in her look, the eyes in her stare. Innocent children, you better beware. The world was such a wholesome place until Cruella, Cruella de Vil. First you think she's a devil, and after time has worn away the shock, you come to realize in their eyes, she's watching you from underneath the rock. That vampire bat, the inhuman beast, she ought to be locked up and never released. Like a spider for the kill, that's old Cruella, Cruella de Vil. Cruella, Cruella de Vil. Oh, Cruella, Cruella de Vil.
That was the Replacements with their version of Cruella de Vil. Let's move now into our chat with Leo Grillo about Delta Rescue, with a reminder that we invite you to join the conversation by calling 813-239-9663, emailing us at dj@wmnf.org, or texting us at 813-433-0885. Let's welcome Leo Grillo to Talk Animals. Good morning, Leo.
Duncan, thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And gosh, there are certainly any number of distinctive traits to Delta Rescue, and I want to explore many of those starting just a moment or two. But first, since I know the sanctuary is celebrating its 35th anniversary, as is this radio station, by the way, let's explore some of Delta's history. Let's go back to the beginning, in fact. What prompted you to start Delta?
Well, I was in 1977. I came to Hollywood. I'm an actor. Came to Hollywood. Just started getting some work in 1979. The fall of 1979, I found 36 dogs about 45 minutes or so into the mountains out of Hollywood. I was just went there to with my dog, whom I found in the mountains about 6 months before. Just took him for a walk, and we found these puppies, and that led to these other dogs. So I bought four big 50-pound bags of dog food, which I'd never purchased in my life, and I put them out for these dogs, and they came out, jumped into the food. They were starving, and I remember, I'll never forget their faces. They were the Briard mixes, a gray, shaggy kind of dog, a bunch of those, and they jumped into the food with their elbows protecting their own plate. They were in there, and there's 36 of them all over the place, and they looked at me while they're eating, and they're smiling, and they're eating, and I can see the appreciation in their eyes. And that was a Sunday, and I couldn't eat. I couldn't get home to dinner or anything. I just had to stay with these dogs. And that was the beginning. It was, what do you do? What do you do? You're alone renting a place in Hollywood with three cats and a dog. What do you do? You keep feeding. And that, I didn't know at the time, was my introduction. It took a year to get those dogs out. There became 60. People knew I was feeding, and they dumped more dogs. They're all abandoned out there.
And sorry to interrupt, Leo, but what is it about that area that prompts people to abandon their dogs there to begin with?
Well, that's all gone now. It's changed. But what it is, that was the forest, picnic grounds, campgrounds. I got on the David Horowitz Fight Back show with this back when. Jane Pauley was on the Today Show. I was on that three times. And we got this story out, and it turned out there's an epidemic of abandonment. This was happening all over the country, just nobody had ever said it, So all the campgrounds, picnic grounds, just take them out to the woods and dump them. People have this misconception that these dogs will eat the way, like, the coyotes do. Oh, well, there's rabbits out there. They'll eat. So they think maybe they'll survive. Think maybe somebody will take them.
And so that just, at that time, that just was the location where people somehow figured, this will be the best scenario if I do have to abandon my dogs. This will be the best place to do such a thing.
Well, that was a pocket that I found. I tripped into. That was just the beginning. I found later there were others. People say, oh, there's more dogs over there. If you go 3 miles that way, so that's how it all began.
I guess that day that you first fed those 36 dogs, and then, of course, heard and found that there are more, it sounds like you're just the kind of guy that there's no question that you would just sort of continue. A lot of us would do, a gesture like that, but wouldn't necessarily keep going and keep expanding. So what sort of, was there something particularly that was driving you, or you just felt like, hey, I got to keep helping these dogs, or?
It was funny. I did an NPR interview back in 1983. Can you believe that was 31 years ago? And it was on their top 10 for a long time. It was called Cross My Path. And I said, back then I had this theory that, the universe and I have a deal, I thought, and any animal who needs help, my help, will cross my path. Could be a mouse, could be the cats that jumped in front of me in Hollywood, could be whatever. And I thought, well, those are my animals. I have to help them. They've crossed my path. They're asking for my help. And you... when you have an animal cross your path, you can help them. So for years, I thought that maybe that's what was behind all this. But I figured over time, it occurred to me what the big difference was. And this is really it. What do you see when you look at an animal? What do you see? And what I see in these abandoned dogs, abandoned cats, what I see is a little three-year-old child. Imagine this. You go out to a campground, and there's a little three-year-old girl with a torn little dress on, and she's cold, and she's shivering, and she's under a tree, and she's crying, and what in hell just happened? Who did this to you, what are you going to do? You put a blanket around her, pick her up, take her to the police station, but, you take her, you get her out of there, and the difference is that's what I see, and I figure that over the years, that is exactly it. It's not just abandoned in the wilderness. It's born in the wilderness. It could be anywhere. I'm out here. It's the deserts. We're in California. We have these tremendous deserts, and deserts in the summer, you don't last. There's 115 degrees. Sometimes it even gets higher. Horses. I have horses. Horses are in trouble. You know, people abandon horses in the desert. You know, and they die of thirst right away. So it's really that. It's looking at these animals and feeling who they are, and they're these little kids. And how could you not help a kid? You have no choice. You really have no choice.
But it's interesting, and it sounds like you've given this a lot of thought, and obviously you've been doing this many, many years. So what is it, do you think, about your makeup or your temperament that enabled you or prompted you even to look at those animals as the abandoned three-year-old child? I mean, what did you have certain experiences as a kid, either with humans or animals, that figures into this in some way?
Not at all. It just was part of my being, and you know, I'd like to think I'm 30, but I've been doing this 35 years. And when I was 50, I had my only baby. I mean, I had my daughter at 50. So there's a gap, you know, and watching her grow up and watching her develop and everything, and it all just flashes back. There's this whole time in my life, seeing the animals and knowing that they're little children, and now having one of my own, I was right. They are little children. Everything about them. We raise little hand-raised orphan kittens. We've raised, my daughter and I have raised four litters in the last 3 months of, you know, tube feeding. I had to tube feed them in the beginning. They're in incubators. You know, we raised them. You look at these little kids, and I tell you, as they're getting older, you know, they're 4, 5, 6 months, some of them are 4 weeks now. But you lay down on the bed. We brought them home, and we can't let them go back. We can't even take them to my own sanctuary, which is like heaven. You know, you hand raise them. They're so in love with you. They're part of your family. They look at you like, hey, mommy, hi, daddy. You know, and you lay down on the bed, and there's 10 little tails coming, and there's bodies all over you. You know, they just love you to death, and you go, that's a child. That's a three-year-old child. What does a three-year-old child do? Mommy, daddy, puts the arms up, jumps on you, hugs you, does all this stuff. They're, oh my God, they just capture you, and you're gone.
So it's interesting, because it sounds like you intuitively saw that and felt that, and then that was sort of borne out and underscored when you had a child yourself. But it still sounds like, I guess what I'm sort of getting at is that underneath this all, or behind this all, you obviously have some sort of very strong, unusual bent towards compassion and helping whoever it is in need. And in your case, it tends to be animals.
Yeah, well, that is exactly it. You know, over the years, you learn, and this is a harsh statement. I mean, I'm going to say something controversial. But I have less and less compassion for humans as time goes on, because of what's happening with the animals, because of the abuse I see, because of the abandonment I see, because people don't care, because of they're apathetic, or they just simply, I can't understand it. How can you look at an animal in need and not help them? How can, you know, after this show, I guarantee you, here's what's going to happen. People are going to write to us. They used to call. You know, they'll write to us on the website. And I'll start getting, because I answer them myself personally, and I will start getting, well, I have this dog, and I can't keep him because I'm going to be moving, or because I'm going to go to, you know, there is no reason in the world to give up your child. How could you give up your child and look in the mirror the next day? And I'll get these calls. And please take me. You have a no-kill care for life. My God, your animals are lucky. Can you take mine? You know, that's the most despicable thing I can ever hear. How can you look at an animal? How can you have one in your home? How can you have this child in your home? And then, well, he's disposable. You know, I mean, he did his thing, and now for some reason he's inconvenient, and I'm going to let him go. How could you do that? Honest to God, I'm driving yesterday, and I said, where I'm having this exact discussion with my daughter about people and their animals. And I said, the way we are, and I'm going to tell you the way we are at home. You know, I put the wee-wee pads down. You want to pee on the floor, pee on the pad. But, you know, I'm not going to throw you out or scold you or even take you to my own sanctuary because you peed on the carpet once, you know, or every day. I mean, we live with it. You put up with it. It's your child, for God's sake.
Well, and again, I think the other product of you having done this for so many years is you probably, can't help but have that sort of bubbling sense of outrage when people do say, hey, you know, it's become too difficult, or this dog's a little bit of a problem with behavior, or, you know, whatever it might be, like, hey, can you take him or her off my hands? And after a few years, much less 35 years of that, yeah, I'm sure that just probably can't help but make your blood boil in most cases.
Well, look what they're saying. Look what they're saying. They're saying, hey, you know what? Your life isn't as important as mine. I have to go do this, so will you take my problem? You know, and take my problem so I could go do my thing. You know, anyway.
Yeah, very upsetting. I get it. Yeah. Well, if you just tuned in, let me let folks know my guest is Leo Grillo, founder of Delta Rescue. Delta, in this case, being an acronym, houses upwards of 1,500 rescued dogs and cats. If you'd like to ask Leo a question or offer a comment, please call 813-239-9663. Email dj@wmnf.org or you can text 813-433-0885. All right, well, let's find out a few more specifics about Delta Rescue. First of all, the sanctuary is in Acton, California, which I guess raises at least two questions. First, of course, is why Acton?
Well, it ended up here. It should have been born here, actually. But what I was in Glendale. Glendale, California is the legal address. The public address. It's P.O. Box 9 in Glendale. That's a funny story. We had P.O. Box 11523 for a few years, and I went to the post office, and I said, I want a single-digit, you know, you can't get a single. And the guy says, are you kidding? Single-digit P.O. Box? Families for 100 years have held on to these. 2 weeks later, somebody passed away. The Box 9 was up, and they called me. They said, you won't believe it. So I took Box 9 Glendale, and that is our real address. All our mail goes to P.O. Box 9 Glendale. Actually, they don't even put the zip or sometimes they put California. They don't even put the zip. It just gets there. Back in 83... When Empire came out, I had our first little shelter. Was a kennel down in El Monte. It was an old, dilapidated, condemned kennel that I bought, and donor help and a lot of publicity to try to get help to buy it. And I moved my dogs in. I had 250 at the time dogs that I had been over that couple of years feeding in the wilderness, taking them when they were in trouble when I could get them because, you know, it was hard to catch them. And I brought them into the sanctuary. I learned how to use cage traps. You know, they walk in, the door closes, you got them. So that's what helped a lot. But back when I did that, that I knew when I took that step, I said, oh, my God, a kennel? You know, which was shelter, a kennel. If I buy this, there goes my life. I'm going to go all the plans. There goes everything. And the only question I'm going to answer it again today, right now, the only question I ever ask myself is, what's right for the animals? Every step of the way, it's what's right for the animals. And what the answer to that is not convenient for you. The answer to that costs you marriages sometimes. You know, the answer to that question in the beginning was 1,000 times a day. Now it's maybe 3 or 4 because, you know, everything's settled. What's right for the animals? And the right thing to do was always my first wish. This sanctuary in Acton became, I started looking for land where I could move the animals out of the city, out of the old dilapidated kennel, give them more room to run around. And I started looking, and I found this town called Acton. We, at the time, it was semi-ghost town. We were the first ones here. Now there's, 30 rescue groups. And I bought this land with donor help. I bought a 23-acre piece of land and with a house on it, made the house into a cattery, built fenced yards, and, you know, brought the dogs in. And I bought that in 86. Since 1986, we've been there. And this place has evolved organically. It's what's right for the animals, what's right for the animals. I always wanted a better housing system, and I had this idea on straw bales. How do we do, in an emergency, Katrina, how do you put up shelters for dogs, after Katrina real fast? Well, in 8 minutes, you could build a straw bale doghouse. 25 bales of straw, 3 sheets of plywood, you can put it up anywhere. And so I started there evolving, and now we have the straw bale doghouse recipe is on our website, but it goes all over the world. Manika Gandhi wrote a letter that she appreciated this invention. She was using them in India. She's a very... humane woman. She's into animal welfare in India. So, that's really what it was. I've got to find a better place for the animals. Organically, we're going to grow it. You know, we had wooden dog houses, then we had plastic dog houses, then I had built real wood sheds, you know, with insulation for dogs, and then I evolved it into something called Dogtown, which was a concrete structures with boilers so they can have heat and cool underneath. That didn't work the way I liked it, and the least expensive and the most efficient turns out to be straw-bale dog houses. If they go on the website, you can see them. You can build them in your backyard. We stucco them, you know, so they're permanent. But even just the straw, they'll last longer than the life of the dog. They'll last 20 years in the weather. We've tested them.
Well, can you sort of, just for people who might have trouble, I mean, we get a sense that it's in the desert and in California, but can you sort of locate Acton for us, like either with a landmark or two or a city or something that might be familiar to at least most of us?
Well, it's not really, I mean, it's pre-desert. It's out of the basin. L.A., as you know, is a basin, and L.A., we have three weather maps at night. I mean, they show us the weather in L.A. It's the most incredible place. You'll have three maps. They'll have L.A., which is the basin. They'll have that. They'll have the valley, which is, you know, after you get out of the basin, you go over the mountains, and now you're in the valleys connected to Los Angeles, so they'll have the valleys. And then they'll have the mountains. They'll have a mountain weather forecast, you know, so... we have all of this. We're actually in the foothills. The mountains are even taller, and they have lakes, and they're famous. But we're in the foothills. We're at 3,000 feet. It's outside of Los Angeles. In the old days, they used to say, well, when the earthquake comes, you know, you're going to be the beachfront, you know. But we're 3,000 feet. It's beautiful up here. It is colder than I would like in the winter, but people are going to say, you know, what a wuss, you know. Cold is for us, it gets down to 30 sometimes. And then in the summer, it does get hot. We'll get it to 105, 110, you know, so we're battling heat. We have swimming pools for all the dogs. We have big, huge fire sprinklers for the horses. The cats have air conditioning. They're all indoor, outdoor. And that's our weather thing. It's just a beautiful place. I was in the local diner a few years back, and I remember when I was 77, when I drove out here, I came through Wyoming. And I love Wyoming. There's just something about it. It's you know, it's beautiful, 8,000 feet, it's mountains all around you. It's gorgeous. And I was sitting in the diner in Acton, and I looked out the window where you can see our mountains all around. It says, "My God, I moved to Wyoming." You know, it's the Wyoming of Los Angeles. It really is beautiful. It's cowboy country in a sense. You know, we all have out here. There's ranches and horses, and you dress like the cowboy you see in the old westerns, and you can go watch the old westerns on television and be sort, except for the guns and rifles and the saddles, we dress like that out here to live. Most, you know, it's the way you live. You can't put on city clothes and sneakers and come live out here.
Yeah, especially given a lot of the work that's being done, I would think that's not really the best way to go. Yeah. Well, let's.
You've seen it, by the way. You've seen Acton in many movies. They're shooting out here all the time.
Oh yeah. Okay. Just because it does have that setting that it probably evokes.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's get a few callers involved. Hi, you're on Talking Animals with Leo Grillo.
How are you doing this morning?
Good. How about you? Did you have a question for Leo?
Yeah. One, I think your work is important, and what you do is very necessary when it comes to the care and maintenance of animals across the board. But I'm kind of confused as to, I was listening to you talk about how you're less sympathetic to human beings. Is that directed towards specific human beings or all human beings?
Oh, I think he explained that, but feel free. Thanks for your call. Feel free, Leo, to elaborate or re-explain if you'd like.
Yeah, generally we get the calls, and I'll get people who call me all the time, or especially on the emails. I get this from across the board every time we do a little, you know, radio show or you know, print or something, and it's people telling you these elaborate sob stories of why they want you to take their dog or their cat. It starts there, and it's those people. I'm not walking down the street saying, "Oh, I hate these humans on this planet." No, it's not that. It's the people. The people who call me, the people who write to me, are not calling and writing and saying, you know, "Hey, how are you? You want a coffee? You want to do? Hey, let's talk about this." It's not that. The people who are calling and writing, this is like 99% of them are you have this. You have this place for 1,500 animals. I don't. I have an apartment, and I have this dog who's driving me crazy, and I want to get rid of him. He's 5 years old now, and I can't take it anymore. Or I have a new boyfriend or girlfriend, and they don't like the animal. Well, this is all I get. Those people disgust me. They just do. It's however, you got to look at the flip side to answer the question. The people who are supporters of ours, or the people who are doing something for animals, and there are a lot of them, the people who are just keeping their own pets for life and understand who they have. And they write now and then, I'll get letters about, oh, I love what you're doing. My dog, my cat, you know, and I've had them. This is my fourth time. I've had them for life. I love my animals. It hurts me so much when I lose them. Those are wonderful people. There are a lot of really, really good people out there, the people that care about their animals. They don't have to support animal charities. They go out of their way for their own animals, their own kids. They feel that way. But unfortunately, a lot of them don't. And do you know, here's the shocking, shocking statistic, and I knew this all along. I wrote a book on adoption, how to adopt animals, because there was not. There wasn't anything. I learned how to do it. I wrote things on it. I wrote a book on it. I made a movie on it back when, called Safe House. I did all this stuff, and then I found out why adoption doesn't work for us. And why it doesn't work is people only keep their pets in America for 2.5 years. That's the national average. And that was before the recession. This was research before the bubble burst. People keep pets for 2.5 years. How could you, are you kidding me? Well, yeah, I keep mine for life. Well, imagine the average is 2.5 years. Somebody else keeps them for 6 months. So that's a shocking thing. And I said, you know, for our animals, I rescue them in the wilderness. It takes a long time to get them. We're very, very attached to them. They're all little kids. They're all, you know, I learned the hard way that when I adopt them out, some of the adoptions don't work out. Sometimes they put the animal down because the vet says, oh, he's developing kidney disease. You know, in 2 years, he'll have a kidney problem. Well, they put them down because the local vets, you know, that's what they do. You know, well, put them down. Why did they do that? I don't know, but they do it. A lot of them do it all the time. And people write in, the vet said my cat is getting this. I should put him down. What do you think? It changed vets, you know.
So, yeah.
Yeah, this is what I get. That's all. And
well, that's
national average.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
I'll say national average 2.5 years. A lot of I don't know. Everybody I know who's in rescue does this. They go to the pound, which is great, and they take an animal who's on death row at the pound, which 95% of them are on death row, and they'll adopt them out for whatever reason. You know, their heartstring got tugged when this dog looked at them, or hardly cats. Nobody does cats. Hardly anybody does cats. But dogs, you know, this dog looked at me and I melted, so I'm going to find him a home. Well, if you go to the pound and rescue a handful of animals and find them homes, that's wonderful. You've just given them 2.5 years. They only had 2.5 hours left, but you gave them 2.5 years. That's wonderful. We don't adopt my animals. We don't adopt anymore because I promised them when they come in, I'm going to keep them safe. I'm going to make sure this never happens to them again. You poor guy, I'm never going to let this happen again. Well, the only way to keep that promise and the oath is to keep them. I cannot trust people who adopt them. They only keep them on average 2.5 years. I've had some donors who were the best donors to this organization, you know, take animals in the beginning when I adopted. And then I found years later, it didn't work out. Some of them had given them away. Some of them turned them over. Some of them called me and said, I can't keep my dog anymore. You know, so it was disheartening. It was disheartening.
So yeah, because that's certainly something I really tended to focus on, that you are a Care for Life facility. And so that, yeah, meaning the animals there are permanent residents. They're not adopted out. So when did that, because you mentioned that there was a time when you did adopt out those animals. So when did that shift take place from adopting at least some to now all of them that end up there stay there?
Well, you know, Duncan, that is a fantastic question. Nobody's ever asked me, and there was a moment. There was a moment, exactly a moment. We were doing an infomercial back, 20 years ago. We were doing an infomercial, and in the infomercial, I developed this idea for what I wanted to show people, and it was a segment on dogs, a segment on cats, always three pods to an infomercial, and the third segment was going to be on adoptions. So I had discovered we have tours for members, there was a family who was a donor, they were wonderful people. They had given me a Canon camera outfit when the guy upgraded. He gave me a whole outfit, lenses, everything, and I used to shoot my photos with it. I mean, these are just wonderful people. And they came up, and I said, hey, you know what? They wanted to adopt a dog. I said, come on up on camera. Let's do it on camera. So there was a dog named Bonnie. Bonnie I had rescued the day before Thanksgiving, many years before, 10 years before. And I had to crawl through like 50 feet of tunnels that she had dug in this very dense wooded not wooded, it was reeds, like, you know, it was a flood control area. And I found her puppy. She had 9 puppies. I got them all out. Bonnie was hard to catch, but I put the puppies in the car. Eventually she went in, and she went in with the puppies. Mostly they don't do that. So I took her back, and we had all her kids, and we had Bonnie. Bonnie was about 10 years old now, and this lady, who is a wonderful person, said, "I love this dog. She reminds me of my childhood dog," whatever her name was. And so we did the adoption on camera. And when Bonnie drove away on camera, I had this very sinking feeling. I love that dog. I'd had her 10 years, but, you know, I have to adopt them. I can't be a hypocrite and just keep everybody, right? And I let them go. So we did that, and I called, and Bonnie's wonderful. And then at Christmas time, they sent me photographs of Bonnie on their couch with 3 or 4 other dogs that, you know, she was part of the family. And, oh, wow, this worked out real well. And a year later, I had this strong feeling, and I called them in the summer, and I said, "How's Bonnie?" And they said, "Oh, bad news. We put her to sleep last year." And I went, "What?" And that's why I used this as an example earlier. And they says, "She was developing kidney problems. My vet said to put her to sleep." Now, here's the ultimate irony. Back about 25 years ago, I worked with UC Davis, and we invented, it was the dream come true, they'd never had kidney dialysis for dogs or cats. It did not exist. And we started a dialysis center up at UC Davis to take acute and chronic dialysis, kidney patients. And today, that's all over the world. That's a big thing. It's you can get dialysis for animals. If you get a dog who drinks antifreeze, they used to die. Now, if you get a dog who drinks antifreeze and get him to a dialysis center, the first 24 hours, they dialyze his blood. Not only did they save him, but he has 0 kidney damage. None. So it also, within 3 years, it changed human medicine. In the beginning, they said, "Would you like to use the normal, you know, kidney filters, which are glass, and they wash them out with chemicals, which are carcinogens, giving, you know, dialysis patients cancer? Or there's these new paper ones. They're $30 a pop. Every animal, every dialysis session, you know, you'd throw them away." I said, "Well, what's best again? What's right for the animals?" And they said, "Well, the paper one, but, you know, it's so we did it. 3 years later, the company went to go public. They went to go to the to get into the human world, and FDA said, "Well, you don't have any tests." And they said, "Well, will you accept this thing going on at UC Davis?" And the FDA said yes, and they accepted it, and this became the thing. We made the cover of all these kidney magazines, and, you know, all the patients were now having disposable artificial kidneys. It was a big thing. So we were heavily into kidneys, and they said that they put Bonnie down because some local vet in a shopping mall that takes care of flea allergies mostly, right, and refers out surgeries, this vet said, "Oh, she's developing kidney problems, which could have been from a meal she ate. Her BUN and creatinine were slightly elevated. You know, she's going to have kidney problems. You should put her down. She's going to, you know." And they did. They didn't even call me. I was so, I got in a, and imagine how angry, and most of it pain, but I got in a big argument with them over this, and I just slammed the phone down. I said, "That is the last time, in honor of Bonnie, this place is Care for Life at this moment. I even look at adoptions."
When was that Bonnie incident?
When we could date it by the terrible thing. We had race riots in Los Angeles over the Rodney King verdict. It was that year, because we had looked at infomercials, was a new thing. Ron Popeil with his whatever chopping things were on, you know, and different people were selling things. It was new, and they had the very first infomercial conference at the airport at LAX, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday of a certain week. All these people were all in one room. I mean, you see everybody you saw in infomercials on television, behind the scenes, in front of the scenes, Guffey Ranker, you know, all these people were in that one room at the airport, and I had my infomercial that I had made by, you know, deconstructing theirs, and I made one, and we were looking for, you know, the telephone people who would do the calls and the people who would do this and that, and they were all in that room too. So it was like 300 people. And on a Wednesday we had these meetings. On a Thursday we looked outside the window after, in the afternoon, Los Angeles is burning, there are these fires everywhere, what the heck. Nobody showed on Friday. They had the riots were going on in the area. The National Guard was coming. It was a terrible, terrible time. But whatever year that was, I have no idea of time sometime, but whatever year that was the year that we did the infomercial. That was the year that Bonnie was adopted on camera. And the year after that, the year that I found out they had killed her, and she was only 11 or 12. And then we became care for life. I mean, we were always care for, we were just also doing adoption, but now we're
that finalized the status. Yeah.
If you got to have one of our dogs and you can't go to the pound and save a life, well, there's something wrong. You know, our dogs are our dogs. Those dogs are going to die. Go save one of them. That's the thing. Go to the pound.
Right. Again, this is Talking Animals. My guest is Leo Grillo, founder of Delta Rescue, which houses upwards of 1,500 rescued dogs and cats. We have just a minute or two left, probably, but we invite you, if you'd like to quickly join the conversation, by calling 813-239-9663, emailing dj@wmnf.org, or texting 813-433-0885. Well, I have a number of other questions, Leo, but I'm going to read you just a sampling. There's been quite a bit of email response. I'm going to read you a sampling because there's definitely kind of an array of feedback here. So one says here in the subject line, says, "I love this guest!" Exclamation marks. Then inside it says, "God, I wish everyone lived by the cross my path philosophy. What a great world it would be. Thank you, Leo Grillo, so much for kindness and work. We'll be sure to donate." So there was that. And then on a different end of the probably scale, this one says, "You, sir, are doing great harm to the animal community by shaming people for giving up animals they cannot care for. How dare you? You are doing good work in Acton, but my gosh, we want people who can't provide a good home to give up their pets so they can be rehomed. Stop whining on the radio. Encourage people to rehome their animals so they don't suffer from abuse and neglect. Can't believe you don't get that. And please, people fall in love with cats and shelters every day. Get real."
Am I allowed to?
By all means, you're allowed to comment to any or all of them as we go through here. Yeah, for sure.
All right, I'm going to be very conservative. There's some group out there trying to raise a ton of money, lying to people, saying there are 600 million strays in America, and we're trying to develop a food that gives them birth control. What a joke. How are you going to feed strays birth control every day, you know? But here's the thing. Every research we've done, animals who are out there who need homes in the pounds, in the shelters, in the humane groups, in the thing, they've estimated at around 2 million. So this person who wrote that, there are over 2 million animals who are being killed every year because they don't have homes. Encouraging people to give up their pet because they're going to get rehomed is off the wall. I mean, that's insane. How are you encouraging people to give up their children because we have orphanages and we can find foster homes who would care for them better than the people who are biologically their parents? No. You have to encourage people to take pets. In fact, if you do this, I thought of this the other day, 80 million families have pets. Well, okay, let's say half of them are the kind of animal people who will keep them for life. If 5% of those families went to the pound and took out one dog or one cat, we would close all the pounds. That would be it. That would be the end. So it's about getting these animals homes, not rehome, but getting them homes, permanent homes, forever. It's not encouraging people to give up their pets. And statistically, and I know this is absolute, I know so many rescuers, cats are ignored. The most wonderful cats, they die in the pounds. Nobody wants cats. Feral cats, forget it. They put them to sleep as soon as they walk in. Cats are in really bad shape.
And Leo, let me, we're just maybe have a minute left, and there's maybe one or two more emails I'd like to get to, but let me, while I'm at it, before we run out of time, let me just announce that the website is deltarescue.org, and there's all kinds of information, including questions from vets and status in terms of charitable things. So I was going to get into, if we had more time, how the operation is funded, because it must take quite a budget to keep this baby going. So, but let me see if we can read at least one or two more emails. This says, "Bravo for all you do. Right on for your powerful philosophies. We are kindred spirits, and I'm so happy to learn about your organization." This is from a woman named Melanie Sue Bowles, who's the founder director of Proud Spirit Horse Sanctuary. So she's in that world. And let's do one other one. "I've had dogs all my life. I kept everyone till they went to heaven. There were times I didn't have food for both of us, so I fed the dog. I think a person who dumps animal of any kind should be dumped in Death Valley." So, okay.
I love that person.
That's the Leo Grillo person right there. Yeah. So
give up the food. You know, you share your food. You share your food.
Yeah. Well, Leo, well, there was.
Don't have enough.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Well, there were so many great things that we chatted, but there were certainly other things that I did hope to get into. So maybe we'll chat another time down the road. But we have been speaking with Leo Grillo of Delta Rescue. And again, in this case, Delta is an acronym. And once again, the website is deltarescue.org to find out more about their operation and get all kinds of, again, information and resources. And just don't write him about an animal that you're looking to find a home for from your home. I think that's probably safe advice, don't you, Leo?
I usually just don't even answer those. I delete them.
All right, Leo. Well, thank you so much for making the time to join us today on Talking Animals and all your great work over 35 years' time for all these great animals.
Pleasure. Thank you very much, Duncan. Happy to come back.
Great, great. Okay, we'll speak to you again then. Thank you so much. Bye-bye now.
Thank you.
Let's step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner. Kevin Nealon is a longtime Talking Animals fave, not to mention an occasional guest on the program. We're going to hear a Nealon bit we've never played before, a nice long piece called Chimp Fear. It's Kevin Nealon on today's Comedy Corner on Talking Animals.
I used to be afraid of sharks, but not anymore. Well, actually, you know what? I take that back. I'm afraid of chimps. Chimpanzees. I mean, have you been reading about these horrific chimp attacks? I'm not talking about the cute little chimpanzees with the sweater vest and the suspenders. I'm talking about the big strength of four grown men, chimpanzees. And I don't know how they measure that, four grown men. Maybe they start with one grown man. You know, hey, get in the cage with that chimp. Let's see who's stronger. Whoa! Okay, two grown men, hurry up. Two grown men. You know, until they get to four. And it costs six lives for that study. I hope they wrote it down. I hope they have it written down somewhere. But yeah, these chimps, and call them chimps, not pansies. They don't like that. But they rip your face off, and then they go for the crotch. That's their MO. It's in a Chimp 101 handbook. That's what they do. They get your jaw out so you can't bite them, and then they go for the crotch. I guess so you can't sex them or something. I don't know what they're thinking. But yeah, it is not good. So now, when I go swimming in the ocean, I have to watch out for sharks and chimpanzees. I don't want to be too close to the shore where the chimp can reach in and pull me out, but I don't want to be too far out where the sharks are, or worse yet, further out where the Somalian pirates are. You see, for me, when I stand in front of the ocean, there's different spheres of fear for me. It's the chimp, shark, Somalian pirates, and North Korea. Further out, North Korea. Different spheres of fear. But let me tell you something. At least with a shark attack, it's quick. You know, it just pulls you down. There's no drama. Hey, that's all your friends are going to hear, if that. They're like, where's Kevin? I don't know. I think he's at the snack bar. Throw me the Frisbee, Jack. But with a chimpanzee attack, can you imagine the horror? It probably sneaks up behind you on that little tricycle. Then at the last minute, the horn on the handlebar, and then boom, face, crotch. And then they fling the feces at you. That's how they tidy it all up. They fling the feces at you. And if that doesn't do it, they back over you with that tricycle a couple of times, you know? And you can't play dead with a chimpanzee because they see right through that. They just get angry because you're a bad actor. That's not dead. I'll show you dead. But who do you play dead with? You know, I guess bears. Bears. But for how long? How long when they're batting you against the rock like a salmon? When you finally go, okay, already, I'm not dead. All right, take it easy. You don't play dead with a vulture, because that's what they want. They want you dead. They'll be pecking at your face and ripping pieces of meat off. They don't care. You don't play dead with a possum, that's for sure. You waste the time, you'll both be out in the street. Are you dead? I'm dead too. Yeah, we're both dead. Oh, I saw you move your tail. You're not dead. And some animals, they say, make yourself look big. You know, size-wise, not important-wise. Like, hey, don't you know who I am? You don't know who I am? I could have your job. Don't you understand that? So, yeah, that's all scary. Those are close calls right there.
Kevin Nealon with Chimp Fear, found on Kevin's album, Whelmed, but not Overwhelmed. Hey, would you like to do something really nice for someone? What if that someone was me? Still listening? How about making an early pledge in support of Talking Animals, giving me an important jump in fundraising for WNS Fall Membership Drive, which starts in less than a month. Anything you can donate to now will be greatly appreciated. And as a special deal for a donation today of $50 or more, we'll give you a great deal on either a Talking Animals t-shirt for $50, a collector's item, we're just about out of them. In fact, we don't have any more medium, but we still have a few of the other sizes, or a Talking Animals Anniversary Bash CD. piece. So $50 early pledge gets you one of those. You can email me now at dj@wnf.org. You can donate directly via the Talking Animals tip jar. The link for that is on the Talking Animals Facebook page as well as on my personal Facebook page. Meanwhile, I'll be offering a pass for a tour of Big Cat Rescue as the prize in today's Name That Animal Tune. We'll get to that in a moment here on Talking Animals. Right now, it's time for animal news and announcements. And on a national and local scale, we'll start off with Desmond Haig. Took this from Fortune. Just felt like that was a more credible source in some ways, given what happened here. But anyway, it starts off, the public spoke and a company has taken action. Centerplate, a catering company that serves food at sports and entertainment venues such as Levi's Stadium in San Francisco, BC Place in Vancouver, Qualcomm Stadium in San Diego, and of course right here in Tampa, has parted ways with CEO Desmond Haig after a week of backlash from outspoken animal lovers on the web. Haig, who had steered the Aramark Challenger to big growth and many new accounts since he took over in 2009, was caught on camera in late July kicking a dog in a Vancouver elevator. The video surfaced in August, leading to a rash of media coverage of the abuse and various kinds of responses from Centerplate, but now Mr. Haig has been invited to leave the company. Also local and sort of national at the same time, but Dateline Clearwater, Florida. No animal performances will be held at a redesigned aquatic center planned by the Florida Aquarium featured in the Dolphin Tale movies. The Clearwater Marine Aquarium was the location of the 2011 Dolphin Tale movie, inspired by the real-life rescue and rehabilitation of Winter the Dolphin, which is fitted with a prosthetic tail. A scheduled sequel to hit theaters this month focuses on another dolphin calf named Hope, rescued in 2010. Aquarium officials say rehabilitation and marine rescues, not entertainment, will be the focus of the new $68 million downtown aquatic stadium. Another heads up about Cowspiracy, the sustainable secret. That documentary will be showing Thursday, September 25th at 7 p.m. at Brandon AMC in, of course, Brandon, on Brandon Boulevard. Just remember Brandon. I think you'll pretty much find your way there. We're actually going to interview the filmmakers next week about this really, really important documentary. You can find out more about the screening, meanwhile, and actually see a trailer and some other things by going to floridavoicesforanimals.org. And also locally, there's a First Saturday celebration happening at Hillsborough County Pet Resources, 440 North Falconberg Road in Tampa, this Saturday, September 6th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And there'll be all kinds of things special for kids. You can draw a pet portrait and win a prize. There's more than 150 pets ready to go home. Same-day adoptions for a very low price. They all those adoptions include spaying, neutering, vaccinations, Hillsborough County license tag, microchip, and registration. Other stuff there will be a food truck and bounce house and all kinds of activities and all kinds of cool people and organizations participating. So again, that's this Saturday, September 6th at Hillsborough County Pet Resources on Falconberg Road. And I think that's what we're going to have time for today. I'm Duncan Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals, where the show website is talkinganimals.net. It's time to proceed to Name That Animal Tune. This is a giveaway. You do not need to be a WNF member to win, though we want you to become one now, or certainly during the membership drive that starts October 1st. But how about now? We have a pass for a tour of Big Cat Rescue. The first person who calls in 813-239-9663 and correctly identifies this animal song, it's Name That Animal Tune.
So I turned her loose and she was screaming.
Someone knows that, we'll take that off the air. I'm Donald Strauss. You're listening to Talking Animals. We're at the end of this week's edition. Thanks very much for listening. Again, next week, September 10th, my guests will be Keegan Kuhn and Kip Anderson, the directors of Cowspiracy, the sustainable secret environmental-oriented documentary that's opening eyes and I think it's safe to say blowing some minds too. So again, go to floridavoicesforanimals.org to find out more about the screening, which happens on September 25th, but we'll talk to them next Wednesday. Hope you visit our website, talkinganimals.net. There's links to Facebook and Twitter and other information, archives on all our shows for all the years we've been doing Talking Animals and more. So it's worth a visit. Go over there. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks to Leo Grillo. Thanks for the calls and emails. This is Talking Animals on WMNF, Tampa, Brandon, Clearwater, Largo, WikiWatch, EM Beyond, Community Conscious Radio. Thanks again. We'll speak again next Wednesday at 9 a.m. on Talking Animal. Thanks. By the way, I played that Name That Animal tune as a nod to Glenn Cornick, the original bass player for Jethro Tull, who passed away last week. So rest in peace, Glenn Cornick. All right, see you next week. Thanks.